You found it. The best place for live, local, conservative talk in the morning. The Commute with Carlson. Stimulating, entertaining, and making a difference. Here's John Carlson on Talk Radio 570 KVI.
There are new worries about the unintended consequences of raising the Seattle minimum wage to $15 an hour. The target of the wage is clearly big business, but a new report shows it would have a devastating effect on nonprofits.
Oh, the heck you say? Yet another problem with the minimum wage in Seattle we weren't told about. Well, how about that? Graham Johnson, Channel 7, looked at this new report about what the $15 an hour minimum wage impact would be on nonprofit groups in Seattle. I'll tell you what his conclusion is. His conclusion is basically it's Shama Sawant and the $15 an hour minimum wage crowd versus shelters versus children versus charity. Here's his report.
Report also highlights some serious downsides. Kathy Mahalik runs Teens in Public Service, which raises money to pay teens to work summers at nonprofits.
Community service and a first-time job for many of our teens.
This year, Mahalik plans to employ 40 teens at $9.32 per hour. So what if that minimum wage suddenly jumped 61% to $15?
We would probably only be able to employ 20 teens or 15 teens compared to 40.
A new preliminary report by the Seattle Human Services Coalition says without additional revenue, service cuts by local nonprofits are inevitable.
This kind of keeps me up at night.
Well, yeah, I guess it would. I mean, there has been, you know, such fanfare, such a, as was pointed out in Danny Westneed's column in the Sunday Times by a local, quote, do-gooder liberal, close quote, business restaurant owner. A cult-like fixation on the $15 an hour minimum wage that no one's really talking about what its direct impact would be. Well, except here on the show. We've been talking about it since day one. But when I was talking to someone from the NAACP about this on Friday, it was that same cult-like mantra. No. No, the $15 an hour minimum wage job will create jobs. It won't cost us jobs. It will actually create them. Says someone who's never created a job. I mean, this is bizarre. But of course, if you're a person on the political left, it's a can't lose situation. You know why, don't you? Because if people can't get a minimum wage job, I guess they'll need to rely more on the government. Which means I guess they'll have a vested interest in voting for the party of government. Because after all, who's looking out for you? Who's going to protect those extended and expanded government benefits that are created because rich people won't create enough $15 an hour minimum wage jobs? Anyway, what does... new report shows that more than two-thirds of nonprofit groups, more than two-thirds, would have to cut their services. Here's a breakdown.
The group surveyed 29 local nonprofits. Three already pay at least $15 per hour. Five say they could make up the impact with extra donations. But 21 say without new funds, they would need to cut services. Among the cuts, shelter beds, Head Start programs, food bank hours, senior lunches. One child care director estimated half of Seattle's child care centers would have to close. He called it a catastrophe.
So, who's in the crosshairs of Shama Sawant and the $15 an hour minimum wage crowd? Seniors, children, food bank users, the homeless. Wow. So it's the left versus the supposed beneficiaries of the left, the marginalized, the at risk. Those people are the ones who suffer because of the $15 an hour minimum wage. Now, what does the high priestess of Seattle socialism, Shama Sawant, have to say about all this?
Socialist City Council member Shama Sawant is leading the charge for $15 per hour. When you see that list, though, does that give you pause about the unintended consequences?
There are no unintended consequences of fighting for $15 an hour while making sure that small nonprofits and small businesses are able to survive.
And Sawant tells me the way to do that is for the city to tax big businesses who would then subsidize the smaller businesses and nonprofits.
Oh, that's interesting. You know what? See if, Phil, see if Shama Sawant will jump back on with us. Because I'd like to ask her how that math is going
to
work.
Yeah, it's been a little while since we've had her on to speak to you. And she's been, let's say, a little difficult to reach since her election was finalized.
Yes. Well,
but
and
hopefully
also,
she'll be able to defend her thoughts on
since
that.
Since we became basically the most noted opponents of the $15 an hour minimum wage, rather than say, oh, yeah, well, I'll jump on the air anytime with John Carlson. I'll show him where he's wrong. No, instead, they're ducking.
Hey, I know I was out of town a couple of days last week. Nothing else came up about her efforts to try and debate the Seattle Chamber director or anything like that.
Yeah, no, we have offered. She said, you know, she'll debate the chamber. And, of course, the chamber people, you know, wringing their hands. I said, I tell you what, I'll stand in for the chamber.
Well, not even so much that.
You just tell me when and where, and I'll happily stand in.
Yeah, who would go to a Seattle chamber event? Not very many people. You know, just people.
Oh, if it was Carlson versus Sawant, you'll draw a crowd there.
Again, I mean, I'm trying to talk about in terms of what she was talking about, trying to debate somebody from the Seattle chamber. We give her an opportunity to be on the radio show, and then she's reaching one of the biggest morning shows in the Puget Sound listening audience.
Yes, well, and if she argues, you know, that's his turf. I don't want to cede him that advantage. Okay, fine. Then let's just have that debate in front of the chamber. Let's have it in front of the Rotary. Let's have it in front of the Labor Council. Let's have it anywhere you want.
I always find it curious.
But let's have it
when people are really adamantly supporting something, and then they want to have conditions about how they're going to express their support.
Right.
Makes you wonder.
Right. Yes. Or when they don't want to debate. You know, it's like Al Gore on climate change has refused for decades, literally decades, to debate anyone on climate change. For someone who believes in a cause, if he's reluctant to defend it against anyone who has a contrary view, that tells you how intellectually comfortable he feels with his position.
Fall back on the excuse that, the debate is over. There is no more debate.
There's no debate over the minimum wage. That's right. There is no debate over the $15 an hour minimum
wage.
It's
a great way to win an argument.
It's settled
it?
Economics.
Yeah, yeah.
It's settled. The debate is over.
It's a foolproof plan for winning an argument.
So no economic debt. There is no downside. It's settled. It is 13 minutes after 8. It's also your chance to phone in right now, be part of the show, 206-421-5757. That's 206-421-5757. Outside King County, got 1-888-312-5757. I have to have a little bit of fun with this. The head of the Democratic National Committee, she's a congresswoman, Debbie Wasserman Schultz. We've had her on before. Kind of a tough-looking member of Congress. I mean, they've tried to clean her up, but I'm sorry. It's not always working. Anyway, she's on CNN, and she's trying to fire up the faithful about how Democrats are going to do really well in the midterms, that they're going to win seats, that they feel great about defending this president and his record, and there are better days ahead. Look out, here come the Democrats. But here she is on CNN.
On that, I know a lot can happen and normally does between now and November. From your perspective, how are the chances looking that Democrats could possibly regain control of the House? I know the way it's described to me is it's not likely.
Well, I think we have tremendous opportunities across the country. I think we're going to pick up seats. I think it's very clear that a lot of constituents across the country have buyer's remorse from the Tea Party Republicans that they elected in 2010.
Gee, I wonder how many people have buyer's remorse about 2012 in the presidential election. But that's another. Well, we already know. The numbers now would go the other direction. But you notice she didn't say the Democrats were going to pick up the House. quote, I think we're going to gain seats. That's so she just simply wouldn't have been laughed off the studio. But let's hear more from Ms. Wasserman Schultz.
The Republican Party has essentially voted in lockstep to shut the government down, to follow, you know, Ted Cruz and the Tea Party, you know, off the cliff and take the country with it. And I think, look, we don't all have to agree on everything, but people do want us to sit down and work together. You know, in the town hall meetings that I have when I'm home in South Florida, you know, people just say, Debbie, you know, you're all to blame. And they're fed up and sick of government. And they're losing their confidence that we actually have the ability to get things done that are meaningful.
Wow, is that ever inspiring? Sign me up for that cause. Where do I get in line here to start handing out literature and phoning people and get involved? You know, she said, you know, I go back home to South Florida. In other words, she goes home to her constituents in her heavily Democratic district. And I'm hearing you're all at fault. So, in other words, they're even blaming Democrats in Debbie Wasserman Schultz's backyard. That helps explain what Chris Matthews had to say on Meet the Press on Sunday. Keep in mind, Chris Matthews himself is a hyper-partisan Democrat, former chief of staff to the former Democratic House Speaker, Tip O'Neill. Here's what he said about how prospects look for the Democrats moving forward.
To the Democrats this election, a rosy scenario is to lose 5 Senate seats, not 6.
That's thanks.
They could
right.
lose 10. And so what they've said is, if we're going to lose 10 seats potentially, and they could well do that, a big sweep, they're going to their battle stations. Nothing on Social Security. All out talk about minimum wage. Nothing on trade. David's dead right. Nothing's going to get done because both parties have gone to their base.
Ouch! The good side, the sunny side for the Democrats in the Senate is losing 5 seats. They got a 6-seat advantage. So Republicans win 6 seats. They now have the majority. Boy, that'll work. So if the Republicans, according to Chris Matthews, could win as many as 10. So this helps explain why some Democrats are, you know, less enthused about running this election year than you might think. Let's go to Kentucky. The Democrats are really excited. They've got a young, photogenic candidate there named Allison Lundergan Grimes. Her father used to be a power broker in the legislature till he got bounced from office. I mean, like he had to leave, not that he was defeated. He had to resign, and he almost went to jail. Anyway, she is now running for the U.S. Senate against Mitch McConnell, who's 25 points ahead of Matt Bevin in their Republican primary. And she was asked the obvious question. Are you going to look forward to campaigning with President Obama? Here's what Allison Grimes had to say.
I want to ask you about President Barack Obama. Would you want him to come down and campaign for you?
This race is one that's about putting the people of this state first. And I speak for myself and don't need any other surrogate to do that. I stand in stark contrast to the president and many of his ideas and platforms.
Oh, boy. Wow. What an advantage it's going to have with being aligned with President Barack Obama. You just have someone who's running for office who basically said, I don't need him. She's a complete neophyte, but I don't want him around here. Now, what's interesting about this, big article in The Washington Post about how Allison Lundergan Grimes was a favorite of the Clintons. And you just heard her say, you know, I don't need any out-of-town people. I don't need any surrogates coming here. Well, Bill Clinton is more than welcome there and has been helping her. Bill Clinton carried Kentucky. In fact, he carried it twice when he ran. It's moved a shade further conservative. Right now, I think Barack Obama's popularity is hovering in the low 30s in that state. And Allison Lundergan Grimes is while she doesn't need a surrogate like Barack Obama, she's certainly happy to have a surrogate like Bill Clinton. You know, it's there was a picture that accompanied this Washington Post story where, again, her father used to be a political power broker, a good friend of Bill Clinton's. And so she, at the age then of 14, 21 years ago, she got to present a bouquet to the newly elected president at his inaugural, the day he became president, back in 1993. So here she is, this very attractive young teenager, handing over this bouquet to the president. You can almost see Bill Clinton saying, "All right, not quite legal yet, but I'll see you in a few years." And now she's 35, and the Washington Post says she's become a favorite of Bill Clinton. He's going down there to Kentucky to help her. He's huddling with her. He wants to help her campaign. Yeah, I think he wants to help her, all right. It's 20 minutes after 8, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI.